This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
We'll get back to your phones here in a second. But Maz, first, the Red Sox thoughts of the day related to a Dave Dombrowski interview you heard recently.
He did. He did a podcast with Buster Olney, the worldwide leader. And there were just a few things in there that struck me either because I thought they were informative or more specifically because they irritated the crap out of me. So I'm going to start with number one, which is Dombrowski was asked about Alex Cora and the rookie manager element, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what he said.
And I think also a couple of real pluses for him. He surrounded himself with a bench coach like Ron Renicki, who's got experience throughout the years of being not only a manager but a bench coach, has experienced everything. He's very close with Alex. And then having Tony La Russa here, he and Tony visit all the time, and Tony gives his insight. He's part of all the meetings, and they've had dinner together.
So I found that part of the answer interesting. Like, you know, he talks about Cora's enthusiasm and everything else, and then he says, well, he's got a veteran bench coach, he's got La Russa here. Those were Dombrowski demands. Like, I still wonder if Dombrowski really is all in completely on Alex Cora. He's asked about Cora, he starts talking about, at the end, Renicki and La Russa, as if, like, he wasn't asked about the inexperience factor. He was asked just about Cora's energy, the positivity of Cora, and all of a sudden turns it into, oh, no, he's got veteran guys around him. We know that that Dombrowski wanted a veteran bench coach, you know, someone with managerial experience there. I'm not sure he wanted Cora at all, frankly. It feels to me like that was an ownership decision, and La Russa was definitely not anything to do with Cora or Henry. That is 100% Dombrowski. So it's almost like he's saying, yeah, I got my guys there to keep him in line. Like, it just struck me as, you know, Dombrowski making it clear that, you know, he has people watching him. And people with experience watching them. So I just thought that was interesting. Secondly, this relates to J.D. Martinez and something we talked about last week about how his power translates to Fenway Park. And, you know, at one point we actually tweeted out an image of J.D. Martinez's home runs last year and laid over Fenway Park. And you could see that the balls went into the bullpen and beyond. I just find it interesting. The Red Sox did the exact same thing. Go ahead, Jimmy.
He does have a lot of power to right field. So in the calculations we had, many of those balls would still clear our right field fence by all means to right center field. He has done it in the past. He drives the ball well at our ballpark. We don't look for him to have to adjust his approach whatsoever.
I just think this is a big thing. That's all. I just think that Martinez's ability to do damage to that side of the ballpark will ultimately decide his impact on the Red Sox lineup. And the Red Sox did the same thing that we talked about. So I think that it's real, that issue is real. It's not just something made up. And the fact that they actually went through the same exercise tells me that they were... Now, look, they think it'll work. Let's see. Because if the balls are jacked last year and they're not jacked this year, then maybe there's a difference. The last one concerns a little quirk in Dombrowski's personality that we've talked about in the past and speaks to me, his massive ego. He was asked about the difficulty of playing in a market like Boston and whether the front office now considers that when they're bringing in players. Go ahead, Jimmy, number three.
It's interesting, though. I haven't been in the game for so long before I joined the Red Sox organization.
Stop. Like, why does he always feel the need to tell us how long he's been around? Right? Why is it always, you know, having been in the game a long time before I got here? Like, it just feels to me he's always doing this. Why? Why does he, is it like his way of saying, don't question me? Or what? It bugs the crap out of me.
Obviously.
It feels like every interview he does, having been in the game a long time, I've had the chance to sit with Leland and La Russa. I go right back to his resume and I say, you've won one World Series, and you won it 20 years ago. Like, fine, you've been in the game a long time. What have you won? This whole winning thing with the Red Sox is really starting to irritate the crap out of me.
Again,
Andrew Benintendi says we won 93 games last year. Dombrowski wants to tell me that he's been around a long time, and between them, they have one World Series. One, which Dombrowski won 20 years ago. Shut up. Stop telling me how long you've been around or how many games you won last year. This should be about going forward and winning championships now. Oh, it just drove me bananas when I heard that. I can't stand that. I'm done.
That's it.
That's it.
You mentioned before whether the balls are jacked or not. Are they jacked? There was some research done on this.
So there was. It was a story that Jimmy linked to. Jimmy, it was a 538 blog, I think. Right?
Yes, that's correct.
In which they actually analyzed the baseballs, x-rayed them, examined the core of the ball, and they ultimately came to the conclusion that there is a difference in the core of the ball starting at the All-Star break in 2015. And just to give you some perspective, by the way, from 2014 to 2017, home runs in baseball increased by almost 50%. I think the number was 43 or 47. I can't remember one of those. But almost 50% home runs went up in 3 years.
Wow.
And they found a big difference in this story. And again, you should check it out on 538.com. That the core of the ball was altered, it appears, at the on or about the All-Star break in 2015. And that in tandem with some other elements, the reduction of the seams in the ball, a more air-resistant coating or cover on the ball, that the ball can now travel an extra 10 to 15 feet, and that that would account for the home run difference. And I think that that's what you got.
How do you feel about that?
I love it. I love it. This is what they should do. You want to get home runs up in the game, jack the ball.
Or the players?
Yes. Fine. So if you want to give the appearance that you're serious about drug testing, fine. Jack the ball then. Shoot the ball up to the moon for all I care. Like, that's the way you do it. Now just get rid of the shifts. Because the shifts are what are leading to this whole launch angle, hit the ball in the air, walk, strikeouts, home runs, right? The absence of action in the game is largely a result of these shifts because players don't want to hit ground balls to the opposite field anymore or pull the ball to that side. They're going to try to jack it. So if that's going to change the action level in the game, take the shifts away, keep the ball jacked. You'll have a pretty good game in about 2 or 3 years.
So the ball jacking did not come last year. It came a year and a half ago is what they're saying.
Correct.
So there you go. That's interesting. Just while you're playing sound, I just want to replay this one more time. We spent time on this yesterday. And I just, again, to reiterate, how this drives me crazy. How when the field manager gets caught up in the bullcrap, that's when, like, that to me is a huge warning sign. The field manager is supposed to be separate from the sales end and the bullcrap and the hyping of the team. The field manager and the coach and those guys got to be worried about that practice that day and getting better from where they were yesterday. And Alex Cora, 2 days ago, was asked about J.D. Martinez and what kind of difference he's going to make in his lineup. And, well, he talks about what that does for them as a team in the league and who he would compare him to. And, Jimmy, if you have that cut, play that.
We talk about the Indians. We talk about the Astros, all these offensive teams. New York, I think we're up there with them.
You played with a guy like that here.
Manny.
Kind of centered around.
Manny. Yeah, Manny David. Yeah.
Manny and David. So he says J.D. Martinez puts him right up there with the Yankees, Indians, and Astros. And when saying you played with a player like that when you were here, he's like, yep, Manny and David. Which is just on two levels. Like, one, you know, don't put too much pressure on the guy or anything. You know, just two of the greatest Red Sox of all time, the greatest right-handed hitter maybe of all time, one of them. And, you know, one of the most important Red Sox players of all time. It just, yeah, okay, so now you have Manny Ortiz? Like, that's dumb. Like, it's just dumb to put that on a player. Okay, that never works. And two, it's this whole thing, like, why are you already tallying up runs at the end of the year, man?
I mean, this is no different than anything John Farrell did. This is no different to me than we have five number ones. It shows me that nothing's really changed with this team. And the other thing, too, this has bugged me. And
So that's the thing that bugs me, is that comment from yesterday. Murray has a whole nother thing that bugs him. What bugs you, Murray?
Why is David Ortiz there? Why is David Ortiz down at JetBlue Park? And this, along with this sound that you just played and talking about what Alex Cora has been saying about J.D. Martinez comparing to Manny Ramirez, it's more of the same. Nothing's going to change with this team because nothing's changing. David Ortiz is still around. I love David Ortiz, one of my favorite athletes of all time. Go away. Aren't you retired? Last year, at least in the first couple of months of the season, you have guys like Xander Bogaerts whining, where's Daddy? Oh, Daddy, we don't know what to do without Daddy. Where's Daddy? Oh, so let's bring Daddy back so you can feel comfortable. Move on. You're supposed to move on. Things are supposed to be different. I've been told this is going to be all different now. It's a different team. It's basically the same team, save for one player, a new manager, and now you're bringing David Ortiz back to appease the young players that are trying to find their way, like Xander Bogaerts? Nothing's changed. So why am I supposed to accept this team and feel different about it when nothing is changing?
I'm so with Murray on this. Like, the idea of keeping Ortiz around, even if he's just floating through.
Go away.
Yeah, get him out of here. again, haven't worked for the organization great, all that stuff. Like, I'm not saying they should, like, completely cut ties with David Ortiz and ban him forever from Fenway Park. But the spring training, you're getting ready for a season a year removed from his retirement. No, get out. Stay away. You need to turn the page here and go forward with the group you got. This is part of the reason why this team can't get an identity without him. I'm with Murray 100%. No, stay away.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blunt force trauma.
We're going to run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And I think also a couple real pluses for him. He's surrounded himself with a bench coach like Ron Renicki, who's got experience throughout the years of being not only a manager but a bench coach, has experienced everything. He's very close with Alex. And then having Tony La Russa here, he and Tony visit all the time, and Tony gives his insight. He's part of all the meetings, and they've had dinner together.
So, like, I just don't feel like La Russa about, like you do. I think La Russa is there to do what they are saying he's doing, because I think if they put him in the dugout, it would be a joke now. I just think he's too detached, removed. But, you know, this idea that we have La Russa, he has dinner with La Russa every night.
Well, I mean, if not to manage, there's still a lot of fingers in the pie there.
Yep.
There's a lot of fingering of the dish in there. You know what I mean?
Like, if he's eating with La Russa every night, I hope they're Ubering on the way home is all I have to say.
617-779-0985. Ryan and Nashua on the Pats. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, guys. Just a quick question to run by you. So the Marcus Peters trade in L.A. frees up the question that Tremaine Johnson is going to test free agency. What are your thoughts on the Patriots possibly going after targeting him? Yeah, he might be a year older than Malcolm Butler, but I think he might be a good complement to put him on the other side of Gilmore. And then, two, Derek Johnson being a free agent. I know he's 35, but do you think he could be a better fit than maybe Kyle Van Noy?
So you're talking about the Kansas City linebacker? Didn't they just go through it with a mid-30s linebacker who couldn't run? Get on the field, David Harris?
Yeah, and I saw a story yesterday. I think I had sent this to you. It was on the ESPN Insider that said, you know, perfect free agent fits for all 32 teams, and they put Derek Johnson with the Patriots. And I saw that and went, uh-uh. Now, look, I like the idea of linebackers. Honestly, I think they need at least two. Like, if I were them, I'd go get two, because I don't think they can bank on Hightower being healthy, and also it allows them to use Hightower in different capacities. You know, and then you got Rivers, Wise, whatever, you figure out the rest, maybe you draft someone else, but I'd go get two veteran linebackers. I just don't want a 35-year-old who had, what was it, an Achilles injury a year and a half ago?
No. At corner, Tremaine Johnson, Richard Sherman, Aqib Talib, Josh Norman, I won't get picky, meaning I'll let Bill make that call. I'll just know what kind of the caliber of player when I see it. In other words, if they have Jonathan Jones out there, opposite of Stephon Gilmore next year, and Tom Brady's 41, and they went all in on Brady, and they have this money to spend, and they go with Jonathan Jones at corner, that's going to piss me off.
What if it's Eric Rowe as the second corner?
No.
No.
Not good enough.
They still need to make a splash.
No.
That's how I feel, too. I don't want Rowe out there either. I want a real.
And to
guy.
Me, it's not like making a splash necessarily. It's this cliche that is now just exceptionally real. Maximizing Brady's window. You went all in for the short term. This is what you did. So do it.
Yeah, and your defense was a sham the whole season. It got exposed at the worst possible moment in the biggest possible game. You have to make a change there. You have to shore up that secondary.
And there's guys available again. Jeff Howe. I mean, it's an interesting story. The Patriots have already called the Seahawks on Sherman. They had that conversation last year. Aqib Talib loves it here. Loved it here. Left on good terms. And, you know, it's one of these rare cases that he left because of money, quote unquote, and they're still fine. Like, again, Jeff Howe, the Herald, reports that Talib would be receptive to the idea of rejoining the Patriots, according to a source. So if the Broncos unload him prior to free agency, that potential courtship could begin in the coming days. This is all coming down in the next couple weeks. So, and again, he reported that last offseason, the Pats did call the Seahawks about Sherman, who turns 30 at the end of this month, but the trade interest was brief. Sherman was receptive to the idea of joining the Pats then, and still is now, if Seattle goes in another direction, according to a source. So I think both these guys could be available. You have a massive need outside of Stephon Gilmore, and you're in this little phase here where it's really all about the now, and you should have money to spend. So to me, there's really no excuse not to do this. Again, cup open lines if you want them at 617-779-0985. Juice is in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Juice. What do you got?
Yeah, hi, guys. First time, long time. I really enjoy the show. Before I get to my point, I just wanted to say I really enjoy listening to you guys, especially when I'm driving home. I mean, it's pure entertainment. I mean, I'm a sports nut like everybody else, but to actually sit there and I'm almost coming to tears laughing so hard on my way home sometimes with some of the squeaky Maz stuff and just some of the stuff you do is great. So I just wanted give you props for that. But as far as the quarterbacks go, we wouldn't even be talking about this if the resident genius down there hadn't done what he did in the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? I'm just still, baffled. And I know it's probably never going to come out, and maybe it will down the road. But, I wish the guy had just, I wish he would just come out and admit that he made a mistake. You know, everybody up there has to be smarter than the rest of us. And I'm still just ticked off about that. You know, they could have, if Butler had played, I'm not saying they win the game, but certainly, I think one play, one tackle, we've all talked about it. You guys talked about it on the show a lot, so we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
Okay, but let me just cut you off. Those are two separate things. If Butler plays and they win that game over the Eagles, they still need a corner next year.
Right, but we might not feel about it like we do now because of the loss.
Well, but that's just emotion. The facts and the fundamentals of the situation would be the same.
True.
They would need a corner. They'd have money to spend. They'd still have only a few years left with Brady. So the Butler thing, I mean, I feel you. Believe me. But that's a whole separate story. Whole separate story. That's a whole different thing. To me, what the regret with Butler is that it just hasn't worked out long term. I mean, that should be a system guy. That should be a Patriot for life, for the balance of the prime of his career. Undrafted, hardworking. You found him. He fit in. He excelled. He took the coaching. You got great value out of a guy that no one saw anything in. He won you big games. He was an important part of your team. That guy should be locked and loaded and signed with you and a core guy for you for years. That just should be, the crime is how it just turned out overall. Like, how did it turn out that way with that kind of guy? It's just that's what sucks. And, he bears some responsibility too. He went south. He didn't respond well this last year. He doesn't deserve a contract. And I talked for years about pay this guy. And he fell off. He couldn't take it. He couldn't handle it. Or maybe he's got off-field things. Like, all that stuff, Bill got right. It seems like Bill was right not to give him a contract. I don't know.
This has happened with more than one guy there, though, now. Like, Collins went into the final year of his contract. They didn't like the way that was going. They cut bait with him in the middle of the season. They took the same chance with Butler. He went south on him. He didn't play as well. So they didn't even get the year of performance out of him. It felt like maybe that happened with Sheard on top of it. And, maybe they got enough out of him at the end. Not that he was as huge a player as anyone else. But they pushed Hightower to the limit, and maybe he didn't even get the deal he wanted. So I don't know. It feels like you keep pounding that drum. Sooner or later, you're going to have a lot of disgruntled guys.
So he did. It did. It went the other way on some guys, and Butler's one of them. And it just sort of sucks because he should be a Patriot. Like, that's just it's a natural guy.
On Tlaib, quickly, if he gets cut, they don't have to wait for the 14th to sign him, right? He's not a...
They may not, right?
I think they could sign him right away.
I think you're right. Okay. I think you're right. Here's Paul in Braintree on the Red Sox. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, listen, I want to talk about J.D. Martinez. Did you see that press conference yesterday with all those buffoons sitting there? They all look like a bunch of crybabies. J.D. Martinez's head was down. Corey's head was down. Everybody looked like they were miserable. Does it make any sense to you? I'm going to let you roll with that and talk.
Okay, no, they don't seem miserable at all.
He's just talking about body language. Is that the
I don't
deal?
Know. They didn't feel miserable. I feel like everyone's talking out of their ass, though. Like, we're getting the same old happy talk. The field manager talking about this is Manny Ramirez and this is David Ortiz. Oh, that's just atrocious.
It is. It's crazy. And again, look, when Ortiz came here, nobody knew what he was, but we know what he is now. And to say that this guy could have that kind of impact, I mean, sure, if he replicates the best year of his career. Again, Manny was a Hall of Famer. I don't care about the whole other, the actual vote or anything.
Yeah, whether he's in or not, he's a Hall of Fame.
He's a Hall of Fame talent.
Hall of Fame talent.
I mean, one of the, maybe what, five greatest right-handed hitters, 10 in the history of the game? And you're going to compare this guy to that?
On day one. Amanda's in the car. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, gentlemen. I had a little deja vu when I turned on my radio because I'm pretty sure we had this conversation last year about Richard Sherman coming to the Patriots. And I called in and talked to you, Mike, and I said, how do you see them coexisting? So they haven't changed their personalities in a year. So how do you see them coexisting if it were to happen?
I think you can handle on a short-term thing, Amanda. I think.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
For a year or two, I think they can handle any sort of personality. I mean, sorry, Randy Moss is just not a Patriot kind of player. Corey Dillon is not a Patriot kind of player. Darrell Revis was not a Patriot kind of player. Aqib Talib may not have really been a Patriot kind of player, but they all lasted here. They all excelled for a year or two, and that's all we're talking about.
Only a year.
Yep, okay. Rent them and then go on to the next one. Absolutely. That year rental of Revis was freaking brilliant.
Sure.
Perfect. Randy, they hung on too long. They gave him a second contract, which was a big mistake. And he went right back to being the turd he's always been. You know, that should have been one and done. Hard to do when he had that kind of year, I understand. But, you know, as long as you stick to the one and done, maybe you can stretch it to two. You know, Talib was here, was it 2 years?
I think one and a half,
One plus or two plus. You know, and maybe that was stretching it, but I mean, that's all I'm talking about, is that to just coincide with Brady's window here. That's what you did. That's how you set it up.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Apparently, in years they make the Super Bowl, it's standard operating procedure for the coaches not to go to the Indy Combine.
Correct.
Because they're catching up on whatever. So they don't go to Indy. And apparently Josh McDaniels has never really gone to Indy. He's never really done it.
I think once in the last 4 years. Yeah, he went.
Oh, is that what they were saying?
Yeah.
So typically McDaniels does not go. Typically Patriots coaches, according to the reporting, do not go. Maybe Bill does. Maybe a couple of guys go, Caserio. But typically the coaching staff doesn't go in Super Bowl years, and Josh rarely goes. But he's not going this year, but people are wondering, are you trying to weasel out of facing the folks in Indianapolis after how you backed out on that deal with the Colts? You said you would take it. You were about to take it. You're about to get on the plane. They schedule the press conference, and then you change your mind. And that left a bad taste in Indianapolis. And are you trying to avoid facing the music in Indianapolis? Some people think that. Stephen A. Smith of ESPN certainly thinks that. Here's what he had to say yesterday.
And now we've heard McDaniels will not appear at the NFL scouting combine in Indy. What a punk move, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, I said it. A straight-up punk move. I don't want to hear a damn thing about how he hasn't been there before or how he's not required to go. That's a load of crap. McDaniels isn't going because he doesn't want to show his face in Indy. He doesn't want to walk the streets of a town he literally just screwed over weeks ago. That's a weak move, devoid of accountability, insulting to everyone's intelligence. But most importantly, it's unfair. Why? Because most of the time, players can't get away with that. They're forced to show up to the proverbial guillotine to answer for their crimes. If that's their plight, why should it be any different for a coach like McDaniels? I have an idea how some would answer that question. But I won't go there for now.
All right, so you know where Steven's going there at the end. We're not going to do the race thing or anything like that. But is it a weasel move by McDaniels not to go?
Yes. And I know what the history is with the Patriot coaches and everything else.
Even though he never goes.
Yes.
Shouldn't he make a point to go this time?
Yes. Yes, he absolutely should. It's a horrible look. At the very least, it's a horrible look. And on top of it, I don't know that this year is necessarily like all the other years. And the reason I say that is they just made this huge commitment to him. They've been talking about, or at least privately, you're whispering to people about how he has been a great influence, or was a great influence, in the drafting and development of Jimmy Garoppolo. You're going to pick the next quarterback, and furthermore, Bill Belichick is opening his world to Josh McDaniels, then he goes to the combine without him? Come on. Like, given everything that went down, he should have gone. He should have gone and faced the music. End it. End it once and for all. Like, to me, and I know the history, I don't doubt that all those things are true, that he hasn't gone in other years. But it's a horrible look.
Yeah, but you're going there to do work, in theory, and to look at these players that you could potentially draft. He's going to go there and what? Get yelled at by Chris Ballard, the Colts GM? If you can avoid him, then avoid him. Path of least resistance. Screw you.
Yeah, but, you know, he would have had to answer questions.
His name's Mudd anyway. He's not going to get another head coaching job now. You know, that's never going to change.
Yeah, so. But I don't even mean that. I just mean that you get yelled at. I mean, or you get made uncomfortable after backing out of something. That, to me, that is sort of closing the book on it. And to me, this is different than, you know, yeah, Roger, come to Foxborough.
I was just going to say.
Right? I know, you know, because it's different. Roger did not enter into an agreement with the Patriots and then jilt them. It's totally different. This guy took the job. He took the job. Yes, I'll marry you. And then on wedding day, the whole bridal party's there. They moved there for the wedding, for crying out loud, and he didn't show up. What a jackass.
No, not everyone gets closure. That's you know, you live in a utopia if you think that's what happened.
I just think it's a bad look, Murray. That's all. It's a bad look. And again, everything that they're saying might be true. Right? In fact, I don't doubt that it is true that he hasn't gone in other years. I still think it's a horrible look. Horrible look.
Who is one of Stephen A.'s favorite callers?
Carlton.
Carlton.
Massachusetts.
No. I think
Carlton.
Is Carlton still in Massachusetts or is he in Tampa?
He's in Tampa.
Carlton, how are you?
So I turn on my radio today and I hear Angry Catboy on the radio and I realized Catboy's still not over the fact that his tool-bag vindictive coach had a vendetta against Malcolm Butler and gagged up the Super Bowl in the worst Super Bowl coaching decision in history. Right, Catboy? You're still pissed off about this.
That is correct, Carlton. It's the second worst Patriots loss in my lifetime.
What was the first? The pinning of the football against Tyree's helmet?
Yes, Super Bowl 42. Yes, thank you.
Oh, well, yeah. Eventually this will migrate to even worse because this was needless. This was Bill Belichick just being his tool bag self, and it cost you and your beloved Tom Brady a Super Bowl. But then I have to also listen to Felger getting it completely ass backwards on the Malcolm Butler idea. You know, Bill Belichick getting it right that Malcolm went off the reservation this year. Malcolm Butler worked for peanuts for you guys, won a Super Bowl for you with that amazing play against Seattle. Then Bill decides to try to cram him down on his contract a year and a half ago. When that doesn't work, he decides to dictate where Malcolm Butler's future is going to be by colluding with his buddy Sean Payton when Belichick didn't even have Malcolm Butler's contract rights. Then jams him down to a $3 million contract and smears him in the Boston media press last spring. And despite that, Malcolm Butler this year leads the team in cornerback tackles, had the second most interceptions.
Carlton, he wasn't good this year. He wasn't great this year.
He was good. He just wasn't as good as he was in his first 3 years. Why do we have to be opposite a guy making, what, four times more money than he does, who never did a thing for the Patriots, and then Bill humiliates him in the Super Bowl, and you think Bill got it right and Malcolm Butler is the problem. You got it completely ass-backwards, Felger. Ass-backwards.
I think Bill may have got the player right long-term, big picture. And look, there's no way to know if they had paid him early and kept him on the reservation, would they have gotten more out of him? Maybe they would have, right? So this Maz was talking about this, you know, earlier this hour about not every guy responds positively to contract years, and so maybe they just got him wrong from that standpoint. And maybe it would have worked out better if they had paid him earlier. I got that. So, but there's no way to know that. I do know that he got worse. He got worse as his tenure went on here. Butler did. And he did not have a contract year. He did not show up and play for the money. He went the other way. And that's on him. I mean, he's not the first guy that they've taken to the wall contractually. In fact, most guys get treated this way. And most, I don't know, other guys responded better than he did. That's all I know.
Yeah, I'm not saying he responded well to it because he didn't. But I also think if, you know, Belichick goes, sometimes it feels like goes into these things and says, well, he's got to play. He has no choice. And he leverages these guys in their free agent years thinking that they're all robots and that the human element won't come into play and detract from the player's performance. And I think that that's what happened with Butler. I think that's what happened with Jamie Collins. I think it happens, you know, on occasion he misreads a guy and the guy doesn't, you know, the guy has a human response and it blows up in Belichick's face. What he should have done, if he read the player right, he should have traded him to New Orleans. I mean, he could have gotten something for him if he had done, you know, done a deal there and gotten a pick. Now you draft his replacement. Now you're on the way.
Well, now we're back to Sherman. I wonder if they were calling Seattle to say Butler for Sherman. I wonder that. But either way, there was Stephen A's rant. Speaking of rants, we have an all-timer for you. Maybe one of the all-time greats. Coming up right after this on Felger and Mass.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
And now we've heard McDaniels will not appear at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indy. What a punk move, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, I said it. A straight-up punk move. I don't want to hear a damn thing about how he hasn't been there before or how he's not required to go. That's a load of crap.
We hit the breaking news sounders on this stuff. Might as well do it. So let's do it.
This is Breaking Sports News.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So what do you got here, Jimmy? This is all news to me. I'm trying to... I don't know what you sent these guys.
Okay, Jimmy Stewart emails me, says, Schefter with Megan O'Brien, Patriots.com reporter. Schefty says Rob Gronkowski will be back next season.
Is and what I will Jimmy play the tape.
Okay, we actually have tape. Go ahead.
Now, there's been a lot of questions surrounding Rob Gronkowski right now. Is he A, going to be back in the NFL? Is he B, going to be playing for the Patriots? What are you hearing about Gronk?
Was it ever a question that he wasn't going to be back next year?
That's what the Twitter machine has been telling us.
Twitter machine tells us a lot of things, right?
that's a lot of times
they don't turn out to be necessarily true. Again, I think he's still in the prime of his career. I think he's got football left, and I think that you'll see him back next year.
Yeah, I think. There's no hard evidence there.
It's not as definitive as he was with Garoppolo. Like,
but he's like, still the scoffing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Whoever said he wasn't. Toots.
Is he A, going to be back in the NFL? Is he B, going to be playing for the Patriots? What are you hearing about Gronk?
Was it ever a question that he wasn't going to be back next year?
Actually, you know what? See, this pisses me off to hear that. So what's this? Is this a Schefter Rapoport thing? Is that what that is? Like, you know, is it because Rappaport threw this out there that, like...
Yeah, I think they do have a thing, by the way.
So maybe there's that, like, you know... But I'll tell you who said that he might not be back. Gronk! Gronk said it at the Super Bowl.
Good job.
He said it when he was asked about it after the game. You know, this report came out, and he says, well, I don't know where you heard that, but, you know, I'm going to assess my future, blah, 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 and I'm paraphrasing. So, yes, Gronk said it. It wasn't just the Twitter machine. Gronk actually said it, and he's not definitively said since that he is coming back. So, like, to suggest that this is all, you know, made up is asinine. Gronk himself said it, for crying out loud. Now, look, what I wonder with Schefter is, does he have some sort of inside info there, or is he just, you know, saying what the Patriots believe in the way that Rappaport was?
Was it ever a question that he wasn't going to be back next year?
Yes. Yes, there was. Yep. There might still be, in fact. Like,
but I give this more credence than Rapp. I just do. Sorry, Ian. I put a little more weight into Schefter than I do Rappaport.
But again, is it coming from...
It still feels like it's coming from the team side.
So maybe Gronk has told the Patriots that he's playing and he just hasn't told the world.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, that's entirely possible. And now, as Murray said, he's just yanking everybody around with these tweets. And who's the wrestle guy that he's tweeting with?
Who's the buddy of his again, Jay Stu? Mojo Rowley.
Mojo Rowley. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, this whole thing of everybody yanking everyone. Maybe they are. Maybe it's all a publicity stunt for the WWE in some way, shape, or form.
Well, I'm buying. He got me. He hooked me, baby. No problem. I think this is kind of fun. It's gotten fun. He's having fun with it. So
was it ever a question that he wasn't going to be back next year?
The reports are that he's coming back. So there you go. There's the latest.
Was it ever a question that he wasn't going to be back next year?
From Adam Schefter. We played you the Stephen A. rant on Josh McDaniels. Speaking of rants, I was informed today that today's the 18-year anniversary for maybe the greatest rant in the history of Boston sports. It's up there. I don't know if it's the greatest. It's got to be top five. You know, if there are better ones, I'm not sure. I mean, you have to tell me what they are. What's better than this? And it's just amazing how old we're getting, because our younger demo, Maz, doesn't, you know, we're 25 to 54. The 25-year-old may not remember this in real time.
Probably doesn't.
He probably just remembers people talking about it. But there was a time, green teamers and kids out there, a long, long time ago, that Rick Pitino was the coach of the Boston Celtics. And things were not going well. They were not going well for Rick Pitino's Boston Celtics, and they just got schwacked. Or maybe this was pregame. I don't even remember when this was. Pregame or postgame. But they were, you know, they got schwacked by the Toronto Raptors, I think, on this night. And the negativity had started to build up to Rick Pitino to the point where, well...
Well, the negativity was building up because he was destroying the franchise. But that's neither here nor there.
All right, so he did this 18 years ago tonight.
Well, we've played hard the whole year. We're going to be positive every day. You're the people being negative. You're in some of the fans. Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door. And if you expect them to walk through the door, they're going to be gray and old. What we are is young, exciting, hardworking, and going to improve. People don't realize that. And as soon as they realize that those three guys are not coming through that door, the better this town will be for all of us. Because they're young guys in that room playing their asses off. I wish we had $90 million under the salary cap. Wish we could buy the world. We can't. The only way we can do is work hard. And all this negativity that's in this town sucks. And I've been around, and when Jim Rice was booed, I've been around with Yastrzemski booed, and it stinks. It makes the greatest town, greatest city in the world lousy. The only thing going to turn this around is being upbeat and positive like we are in that locker room. So if you think that we're not coming to play against the Toronto Raptors, you're mistaken. Only we're not coming to play with Bird, McHale, and Parrish, or Cousy or Russell. We're coming with young guys who want to get better, want to play the game. And we're going to stay positive all the way through. And if you think I'm going to succumb to negativity, you're wrong. You got the wrong guy leading this basketball team.
Yep, we did.
Good point, Jimmy. He had a point.
It was less than a year later, by the way, that he was fired.
Yep.
As coach, they went 35-47 that season, and then he went 12-22 the next year, and bye-bye.
March 1, 2000.
It really is one of the great all-time meltdowns in this city.
18 years ago tonight, the negativity in this town sucks. All-time line, the negativity in this town that sucks. Now, this is a topic that's going to be done tonight on NBC Sports Boston, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I don't want to steal their topic because it was their idea, not mine. So I'm going to let them do the topic, and maybe we'll pick it up tomorrow. It's more of a Friday kind of thing anyway, but I'll just ask you as a tease. This will be, you'll hear this tonight on TV on the Arbella Early Edition, which I will be appearing on. Does the negativity in this town still suck?
No, I love it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know what happened right after that, right?
Well, the Patriots won a year later.
Exactly.
The Patriots won less than a year later, and it all changed from there.
Yeah, but it's still here, and it's. I mean,
so that's really the question. Is this still the Fellowship of the Miserable?
I think for anyone that's still around my age, I mean, most millennial fans, like, you know, listen to some of the feedback for this show. You guys are too negative. How come you're always dumping on everything? Like, I think
is the town negative?
Yeah, it is. Negative. It still is.
The negativity that's in this town sucks.
No.
Is it still a negative town?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like it used to be, but yeah. I mean, it was, you know, back then, how many years had the city gone without winning a championship?
Well, that was the old Jerry Callahan column. Loserville. Loserville.
Yeah.
You know, in the 90s, we were Loserville.
And the epitome of that was having a parade for a guy who won a Stanley Cup for a team that wasn't even here. To me, that's the rock bottom of Loserville. God, disgusting, a Ray Bourque parade when he's with the Avalanche. No, the negativity is part of the charm and joy of living here.
Yeah.
Taking sports too seriously is one of the things I relish of being from here and getting to work here and do this job for a living. You want, what, these teams, and look, sometimes you deal with blowback and sometimes we go a little too hard, but teams that want unquestioned love and, you know, everything that we do shouldn't be questioned and love us and you guys are too, fine, then you know what, when some of these players that
move to St. Louis.
Yeah, or go to Atlanta. Enjoy a passive fan base in a half-empty building on a night-to-night basis, because then you'll realize how much it sucks. Because the guys that have actually come here and accomplished things and learned to embrace the negativity, guys like David Ortiz, they learned to love it, and they learned to love it quick because they realized, wow, these people are lunatics. How much they actually care about this.
Look, it's a bad place to lose. It is. It's a bad place to lose. It always has been. The flip side of that is it's a great place to win. And so if you can succeed at the highest levels, it's a fabulous place to be an athlete.
We're not as negative as we used to be.
No, definitely not.
So now, what I think we have now is nice balance. And there's still, you know, we have all kinds now. We have shows like this. We have shows like others that are going to be positive for the most part and look on the bright side. We've got guys like Shaughnessy. And then we got guys on the other side of it who are home pieces. And we've got like all sort. And I think the fans sort of break as well, where there's still a lot of the Bill We Trust sort of stuff, buying like sheep as Adam Jones did. You know, there's still a lot of those people. But then Bill Belichick could make a really bad decision in the Super Bowl and for a week, people are bitching about it and hammering the guy.
For 3 weeks.
So I think we've reached a nice little balance. And I'm telling you, fans, as Maz and Murray just sort of pointed out, the negativity is, it's key. It's crucial. It's crucial. It's what gives the whole thing layers, and I'm not articulating this well. If you go somewhere where there's just blind loyalty and support and there's no pushback, it's kind of boring. It's kind of boring. I mean, that's where I'm from. This doesn't really exist where I'm from in Wisconsin. It just doesn't. And it's not as interesting. It's just not. And you need Shaughnessy. You need us. You need Jones. You need Jones.
You need me on that wall.
You do. You do.
You want me on that wall.
Because the negativity is what stirs
Tell
it.
The truth.
And I think that the places that don't have it, it's just, you know, like these Yahoo college towns and, you know, some of these pro cities that are just, there's no edge there. It's different. It's not as interesting. It's just not.
Yeah, look, that Pitino thing, and again, not to delve too deep into it, but to me, Rick Pitino, one of the great frauds of all time. And I'm not even talking about the off court, off, you know, beat kind of whatever, the indiscretions. I'm talking about as a coach. He came here. He sucked. He destroyed the Celtics. And he's going to sit here and claim that it was a negative market. If there was anybody that didn't live up to the bill, it was Pitino. He sucked during that period of time.
But also, we've also discussed ad nauseum how forgiving the Celtic fan is, how patient the Celtic fan, the Green Teamers are unlike any other fan in this town, where they really, they are patient and they overrate you and they overrate their players. And, you know, that's easily the least negative group in this entire city, and it's not even close. So when you have those people turn on you, do you know how badly you have to suck? Never mind the negativity in this town.
Yeah, to me, if there was anyone who sold a bill of goods, it was Rick Pitino. Complete, total fraud. Absolute phony as a coach, and got picked apart when he was here and completely exposed both as a personnel guy and an X's and O's guy.
All right, what an epic rant.
I want to tell my extended family, which is all my players, that I'm sorry for that indiscretion 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's that, too.
The Sports Hub.